Well, happy day, Joy Starters. This is another podcast where you find me on the moon. I'm actually en route to speak to 500 to 600 first responders, law enforcement, administration from LA. And I am so excited. So in honor of that, my work with first responders and law enforcement and border patrol in that sector of the world, I wanted to pull out something from the vault from when I worked with the Florida Sheriff's Association. I was able to speak to them and afterwards was honored to do their podcast. So hopefully you will enjoy this podcast and hear about my work and what I teach with first responders. And hopefully it inspires you to thank somebody who serves. Anytime I see a law enforcement officer or somebody who served in the military, I thank them for their service. Maybe you could do that too. Blessings, Joy Starters. We'll be back next week for a live and up-to-date episode. I'll be telling you about LA, and that'll be the last one of the season. We'll take a short break and we'll come back for season 3. I love you guys. Thank you so much for liking, sharing, following all the things that you do for this podcast.
Our guest today is Rachel Joy Barabo. Rachel just spoke to the sheriffs and their staff during our executive leadership conference here in Miami on the power to change the narrative and finding purpose in life. Previously, Rachel was a sportscaster for 17 years before developing hashtag I'm changing the narrative with student athletes in mind. It is Rachel's belief that one crooked course made straight is everything. One misstep not taken means one less victim in the world, and one less life thrown away because of a split-second bad decision. Rachel's mission is to promote positive mental health and good love for yourself and others to serve as inspiration for students, professionals, and parents to create an individual legacy of purpose, passion, and platform. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
You're here at our executive leadership conference in Miami, and we've had an opportunity for you to speak to the sheriffs and all our attendees about the power to change the narrative and to find purpose in life. Talk to us a little bit about big picture, what you spoke to us about today.
Yeah. You know, I feel like so many of us, including myself at one point in my life, are living in such a way where you're just got your head down. It's all about your goals. It's all about you. It's you know, it's you based, and you're carrying around a backpack full of invisible bricks that, you know, we call funky junk, which is bitterness, trauma, anger, unforgiveness, abuse, and we think and we believe as human beings that we'll be happy when we win, whatever win is. You know, the marriage is better. You get the promotion. You lose 5 pounds. You get that, whatever it is. And so I just teach people, I teach people from my own experiences in my own life how to live a life where you're radically on fire for knowing what your identity is beyond your job and what sets your soul on fire and how to notice joy and how to pour into other people.
One of the things I wrote down is took notes today. Yeah. I can do
something. Thank you, by the way.
Yes. You told us about the note taking. I certainly did that. Is I can do something about it. And yes. Talk to us about that meaning and what we can do to change the narrative and what we can do about it. Because sometimes we do feel helpless that this is all too much to take in at any given time.
Yeah. You know, so where that came from was I was a sportscaster. I retired in 2019 because the movement imchangingthenarrative.org got so big that I retired and it was no longer my purpose and what brought me joy. But when I started it back in 2016, I saw a problem and the response in my soul was I can do something about it. And I didn't think that I could change, you know, crazy amount of lives, but I knew I could change a soul. I could change a life. I could do that. I can make an influence on one person. And I think if we start to look at, it's daunting to look at the world and say, I can't do anything about that. I that's too much. I'm only one person. But if you start to look at it like, if I can change one person's life, I can influence one person's life, you may save a life. That you start looking at it like that, and it's you can do that. And the other thing that I help people do is understand that you were put on this earth for a specific assignment. I can't do what you're supposed to do. You can't do what I'm supposed to do. And the other thing is you can't take what's meant for me and I can't take what's meant for you. Your destiny, your purpose, what you were like uniquely meant to do on this planet. So I can do something about it is finding what a problem is in your life and or in your world, your community, your family, your workplace, and saying, here's my unique gifts and talents, and I was made to be able to change the narrative of that problem.
Another thing you talked about, and if you can help us out to understand this, is we all need to start being noticers. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean to start being a noticer?
We can go no further than social media or a day without getting a commercial on television or social media or somebody saying, reach out for help, reach out for help, reach out for help. I think we're in a time and a space, and I've been in that dark place before where I was in such a dark place that I couldn't reach out for help. We need to start teaching people to be noticers of the people that are in those dark places. And so I'm not saying that we're not going to, you know, stop teaching people to reach out for help. We want to do that. But we also want to raise up an army of people that are noticers. And noticers and joy starters is another phrase for it, are people that notice the little things, that notice, that say, hey, that's beautiful, or you're smart, or you did a great job, or I appreciate that. My favorite text to send to people is, I don't need anything. I just want to tell you blank.
And that's the thing I think you also mentioned is this idea of reaching out to people. You talked about texting folks, mm-hmm. Just to let them know that you're thinking about them, because those little moments have a really big impact. And that's sort of what it means to be a noticer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I said at the end, I said, does anybody in here know somebody who only texts you or call you when they want something? And everybody, half the hands went up. And I said, how do we not be that? And the way that we make sure that we're not that person is by reaching out for no reason. And so my favorite, again, texts to send are, I don't need anything. I just want to tell you, you're amazing. I don't need anything. I just want to tell you, thank you. That way people know that we're pouring into them and we love them. And we're not that person that only reaches out when we need something.
Now, the other thing you talked about is we get into trouble when we become isolated. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of talks about when you're trying to look at and being a noticer to see maybe some people that are out there in pain. How do we get in trouble when we become so isolated? Mm-hmm. Just the loneliness, but that's ultimately when maybe some of the most darkest thoughts start to creep in and start to think that we're not, you know, worthy of the things that maybe we're working on.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that is I think there's two kinds of alone. I've been alone in a crowd before. Hmm. I've been alone in a bar before and felt utterly alone and unseen. I've also been alone, physically alone, and felt alone. I've also used this cell phone right here and told people I was fine, but was isolating behind the message. So I think there's different kinds of isolation. And I think the more we can, and I mentioned this in the talk, is the pandemic taught us that we need each other. We desperately need each other. That goes back to the noticer and goes back to connection and community and dreaming together and laughing together and experiencing joy together and being a joy starter and cultivating joy, because there are different kinds of loneliness. But I can tell you from my own experience with mental health issues, I got into trouble when I isolated. And I went back and looked at my social media just before I had what I call a dark night of the soul. My social media was fine. There was no indication. I got into trouble very quickly. I had a psychologist tell me once that high functioning people can get into trouble very quickly. So it may not be that a high functioning person within the sheriff's department or that serves and protects, they may not have been thinking about self-harm or taking their own life for a long time. It may happen very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about.
And that's what the thing you mentioned is, your pain is not for you. Mm-hmm. So either be bitter about it or you can be better for it. Yeah. How can we start, I guess, being better for it?
Sit with it. That's a heavy, it seems incredibly simple, but it's really profound. Sit with it. Your abuse, your disappointment, your wife left, your husband cheated, you didn't get the promotion, you got sick, your parents died, your child's sick. Or whatever has happened to you in your life, you know, what I have learned is the more I sit with the hard things that have happened in my life, the less power they have. Mm-hmm. I've lost both my parents. I don't run from my grief. When I start to feel grief roll in or that it comes out of nowhere, I sit with it. I let it go through me. I cry. I experience it, because what I've realized for myself, and this is for other people, is when we stuff those emotions down,
yeah,
it will come out. There's an amazing book for those that love psychology called The Body Keeps the Score. And it talks about if you hold on to trauma, it will literally come out, manifest itself, but sometimes as long-term illness, as chronic illness. So after my father passed away, I learned, I didn't tell anybody that I was ashamed that he died alone. And I held on to that. And I was very, you know, regretful. And I ended up, it ended up expressing itself through my skin. Yeah. It's crazy. And as soon as I started, began to talk about it in therapy, what do you know? It went away.
Yeah.
So it's this point of sitting with it and either talking to a therapist, talking to a trusted person, but not running from whatever it is. And then once you do that and you make that a habit, it has less power.
And you also mentioned to us the importance of that self-care, which is, you know, identifying some of the issues you're having, seeking help for it, mm-hmm. but also even while in the process of seeking that help, figuring out ways to take care of yourself, whether it be, you know, yes, it'd be great to take maybe a whole day off, but you mentioned just the ability of, you know, 15 minutes and doing something that can kind of just calm your mind and body.
Absolutely. The lie that we do tell ourselves as a society is that self-care has to be a day at the spa, or it has to be a
trip. Cost a lot of money.
Yeah. A trip away, or what, you know, I don't have the time or the resources to do it. You do. And really it's getting in touch with, I ask people to start dreaming again. What did little you like to do? What are those things that you know for a fact will bring me joy, will bring me peace, will make me happy, will make me feel accomplished? One woman in the room said setting a goal, starting it, and finishing it. Clearly, that brings her joy. So really, I would tell anybody within the power of this podcast is to make a list and write down all the things that you know for sure right now bring you joy. So for me, I'm going to go hit some golf balls. That's going to bring me joy. Naps bring me joy. My family brings me joy. Cooking brings me joy. My animals, my plants. But then there's this other list. And the other list is like the deeper stuff, like meandering through a foreign city, traveling, learning Spanish, you know, learning to play an instrument, things that like I wanted to do when I was little and still are in there. And those are like some deeper things that you can work towards and work on that really do fulfill your soul. Because when you're good to yourself and you fill your cup and do the whole soul care thing, which is deeper than self-care, you just radically watch your life and those around you be better.
Have you heard the old adage, a warm lead is the best lead? Well, it's true in anything, right? I mean, you see advertisements in magazines and social media and all of these things, but the best kind of referral and advertisement is when a friend says, hey, you should try that. Hey, I use that. Hey, I love that. Hey, I love her. I love this podcast, this book, whatever it is. So I want to ask you to put your thinking cap on. Is there anybody that you could, one, send this podcast to today? Secondarily, is there anybody that you know are decision makers at businesses or at a school or a teacher or administration or a coach that you could say, hey, listen, I think you should have Rachel in to pour into your people? And just so you know, listening to the podcast, you'll learn this, but I've expanded now outside of schools. I work with corporations. I coach people. I work with churches, halfway houses, prison ministry, K-5, high schools, colleges. Wherever you've got an event, I'd love to be considered. And a warm referral is the best thing and the nicest thing you can do for me. Blessings, my friend.
Now, over the last, about 5 years of I'm Changing the Narrative and all of your travels, now you've been able to speak to diverse group. Let our listeners know. I think it's interesting for them to know some of the people you've spoken to. I'm guessing it's everything from high school students to now high schoolers to law enforcement, but also college football teams.
Yeah, it's crazy. It started with, I thought it was going to be high school football teams. I never put two and two together being a former college football reporter that I would speak to college teams. But now I've spoken to 60 college teams, everybody from Alabama, Auburn, Texas A&M, Oregon, recently, you know, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, TCU, Minnesota, Maryland, just hosted 3 collegiate mental health games. And so that's where I'm in market at Maryland, at Minnesota and Utah State, where the whole week's focused on mental health. It's not just a helmet sticker. We're doing all sorts of programs and talking about it, media, And so, you know, do that. But then over the years, 6 years in, I guess a couple of years ago, I thought, well, other people need this message.
Yeah.
And why not high schools? And then I thought, I got invited to take a tour of the border with some famous people. I'm not famous. I just happen to be a broadcaster, but like Ray Lewis and Sting. And so I go down to the border in El Paso with Customs and Border Patrol to learn about trafficking. And I end up falling in love with these people that are serving and protecting us at the border, and end up working with them. Now have worked with them five times in 3 or 4 years. And then we just found out it's going to be a yearly thing, which is just amazing. Yeah. Like, it's mind blowing. And also law enforcement in multiple states, and the Big Ten and the Big 12, prison ministry, halfway houses, churches, and the NFL just called. So just like, what? Like, this is, yeah. And I hope that that came through today, just my genuine excitement and like how honored I was on that stage. And I hopefully did a good enough job at the end by trying to convey that, like, this is not just a job or a deal, you know, like a gig for me. Like,
yeah.
I woke up and jumped out of bed. Like, I've been excited about this. For weeks, I was thinking about the souls that would be in that room that would be somehow affected by one thing that I said that would go back to their workplace or their families and take it back to them.
And you saw afterwards, you had so many people come up to you and share some of their stories as well. So it certainly did have meaning. As you've kind of traveled this country, you've mentioned the border, Customs and Border Protection, mm-hmm. sheriffs here, high schoolers, college football athletes. What is maybe the hardest group to talk to? I mean, as you know, we're all sort of sometimes be reserved initially when you meet someone for the first time. So those groups, you probably love them all, but what is maybe one of the harder ones maybe to start talking to at first to get them to open up a little bit?
Hands down, law enforcement.
Yeah.
Hands down, because there is the stoicness, the, you know, the compartmentalization, the keep it together. But what happens inevitably is they will come up afterwards and say, you changed my life. Like, yeah. something you said, like, I'm going to go forgive my brother. We've been beefing. You know, the person you were talking about, that was me. You know, they'll be kind of pull me to the side and, you know, a man will cry and then you cry. And so that was, it's law enforcement has been the for me, one of the most satisfying yet challenging groups to speak to, because I've had to really grow as a speaker and make sure that I am presenting in a way that that sparks something in law enforcement, because you are, they are meant to protect, serve, and kind of keep that guard up and do that. And so that for me has been really amazing.
Well, I think as you saw with the number of people who came up to you, talked to you afterwards, I think thankfully here in Florida, you've got sheriffs that are well aware of the issues of post-traumatic stress disorder mm-hmm. and a lot of the difficulties of just not just hiring, but then retaining people, mm-hmm. people maybe wanting to leave the profession. So they understand the importance of now, the importance of that mental health,
yeah.
that you have to take care of yourself. So.
That's it. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody right before I went on and I said, I'm not a mental health professional. And they're, oh, you're not? And I said, oh, no, I'm an advocate.
Yeah.
What I do is I normalize conversations around mental health. I advocate for therapy. I normalize and tell you that you've never been so strong. You've never been so masculine as when you ask for help. And so that you will go use your resources that are provided to you within your departments, within your jobs, because you know, that's my role. I would never purport to be what I'm not, and I'm not a professional. I'm a person who has been through enough stuff to kill me and to also make me very bitter, and somehow I've been able to channel that bitterness into better and share that with other people.
Now, in your travels, one of the people we had come to our conferences many years ago, Dave Elko?
Yeah.
He gave leadership training. How did you kind of run into him?
Is it Kevin Elko?
Kevin Elko, sorry, Kevin Elko. He came and spoke to the sheriffs at our winter conference about a year ago. And,
okay.
He had his nice big Alabama championship.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to text him whenever we're done. He is amazing. I was a reporter in Tuscaloosa. I was an Auburn grad, had done a bunch of reporting around Columbus, Georgia, but then was asked to come to Tuscaloosa in 2009 and cover the Crimson Tide. Now, that was a really pivotal moment for me because I was no longer like an Auburn grad. I was a reporter. I was just a reporter. And I moved there not knowing a soul. And I knew that he was Nick Saban's right-hand man. His, you know, his, all the stuff, don't pray for a blessing, pray to be a blessing. Here's another one he says, be where your feet are. So sometimes when I find myself, I have crazy anxiety, I'm either too far ahead or I'm in the past. I'm not where my feet are. And so even this morning when somebody was speaking back to me afterwards and asking a question, I wiggled my toes on the stage to remember this moment, like how amazing it is. So I'd interviewed him and then we kind of became friends. So I was working at the Tuscaloosa News. I interviewed him and he was the one, I thank him for this. He was the one that made the call to Jimbo Fisher and said, you need her in. And like, he changed the trajectory of my life. You talk about being a noticer. He was a noticer in my life. He did not have to do that. And the world will tell you, just the world will say, Kevin, Dr. Elko, just look out for you. You just do you, Dr. Elko. You don't have to help her. Who, you know, but he's not built like that. He teaches the same things that I teach. Be a noticer, help other people, look for joy, look for ways to open doors for people. And he opened a door for me. And now think about all these people that have been affected through my talks because of Kevin Elko, because of Dr. Elko. It's just, it's insane.
Well, he's a pretty amazing guy. And we really enjoyed our time with him. But you mentioned it. August 26, 2016, you gave a speech to the Florida State University football team.
Yeah.
The coach at the time was Jimbo Fisher. I'm very interested to know how that went because I am a graduate of Florida State University. Go Noles, big Seminole fan. And so what was that experience like standing there in front of the Florida State University football team? And what was that message that you carried that? I guess this is the beginning of your journey now.
Yeah, it was a different message than today. There might be a few phrases that I carried into today, but I was telling somebody afterwards, you know, people ask me all the time, what do you do when you're not speaking? And I'm like, I'm studying, I'm reading, I'm watching other speakers, I'm reading psychology books, I'm, you know, making notes, I'm writing a book. But let me back it up even before that. Bobby Bowden, I had been a broadcaster for, you know, before I retired, 17 years. And I remember the first time Tim Brando helped me set up an interview with him when he was in Tuscaloosa for a game. And I did this interview and I'm nervous. Yeah. You know, I'm like shaking like a leaf. It's freaking Bobby Bowden. And he leans over. I'm going to do a bad impression. He leans over and he says, Shook, you know, if you need anything, you just let me know. And, a few years later, I was writing a book on joy and I reached out to him because famously he had his phone number and his address in the phone book. He said he wanted to be accessible. I reached out to him and asked him if he would let me interview him on joy. And so I'm getting ready that morning. I'm so excited. And for whatever reason, I thought he was in his Panama City home. And so I'm in Destin getting ready to go over to Panama City. And I realized that morning I have an interview with Bobby Bowden. He is actually in Tallahassee. And I start sweating bullets. I go over there. Thus begins this beautiful relationship with this man. I became friends with him. I became friends with Miss Ann. And he told me something one time. He said, Shook, you know, you preach in the Bible without ever preaching the Bible. And I said, yes, sir. I said, I do know that. I said, I'm changing the narrative. Isn't faith-based, but I am. And that man, just
do you recall what he said his joy was?
And all day long. He loved his wife. Mm-hmm. He loved well. He loved pouring into young men. I'm a cry, but he loved pouring into young men, but he loved his wife. Yes. Like they were still in love to the day he passed away.
Yeah.
And one time she had knee surgery and I knew to love him well, and our friendship was to love her well. And so I found out, he told me her favorite color, and I sent her those color roses. And he called me, he said, Shook, I can't believe you did that. And I said, yes. I said, Coach, I love you, and I have gotten to know her, and I just want to spread joy and love to you guys. He said, well, she just loved those flowers. And so, yeah, that's how it started. And then Jimbo Fisher allows me to do this. And I remember, it's funny, just the maturation process. The first time I did this, I was like in a suit jacket and like in a skirt and high heels. Yeah. And I was nervous as a wet cat. I mean, you know, it's like the whole football team and are they going to pay attention? And it was awesome. And I talked about purpose, passion, platform, what makes your heart beat faster in my own experience with domestic violence and how to love women and respect them and protect them and cherish them. And so that was all the things we talked about. Now, here we are 6 weeks later. I wear jeans, blue Delta jeans. I wear, you know, I wear, you know, blazers. I wear one of my t-shirts and try to be more relatable versus, you know, and now 60 colleges later. And I pinch myself on a daily basis. I really do.
Well, you told me another story with the coach. Was it Sonny Dykes?
Yeah.
Where is he coaching now?
He's at TCU.
TCU. Yeah. And you've been able to do that as well.
Yeah.
Speak to him. He had some interesting feedback as
Yeah. He, what the coolest thing is for example, like when I get asked to speak, it's one thing. You're like, you know, you're honored. But then when you get asked back or somebody says, come back or, you know, continue training with us, that's a whole nother ball of wax. So he was at SMU and I was there with them three times. And then he went to TCU and he took me with him, you know? And so he recognized, hey, she really is. And 6 degrees of separation, that whole relationship came from Coach Bill Snyder, the most legend, one of the most legendary.
Kansas State.
Yes. Yeah. So I was at a, I'll keep it brief, but I was at a hosting a deal at the Chick-fil-A Bowl, and I'm the host. Yeah. And a couple of years ago, he's on the panel. And so they come to get us from the hotel, Coach Snyder, and he's in the front seat with his long legs. And I see his, you know, his hand on his leg, and I'm sitting directly behind him. And I used to be in broadcasting, so I don't fangirl anybody. Mm-hmm. But I fangirl Coach Snyder. I'm like, hi, Coach. You know, and I'm sitting right behind him. And I said, my name is Rachel Warbeau. I was in Sirius. And I said, I started this. I'm changing the narrative. And I see him rack his fingers on his knee. And he says, oh, I know who you are. And I mean, wow. I was just like, what? So what has progressed over the years is this beautiful friendship. He's my mentor. I'm his mentee. He then called Sonny 3 or 4 years ago and said, Sonny, she's a really great speaker. You need to have her in. Sonny trusted him, had me in. Now I've been at SMU and now I'm at TCU with Sonny and speaking to them. And it was really interesting. I was talking about relationships. And the guys just eat it up. You know, they're like, You know, yeah. I mean, they're very vocal. They get heard. And even people today, I loved it. I encouraged that at the beginning of my talk. I said, if you feel this, clap. If you want to stand up, stand up. If you want to scream, scream. And there were people that did it today. Yeah. You know, they felt that. And I, as a speaker and a communicator, I really appreciate hearing that feedback within a talk.
We appreciate your work that you've been doing, and I can say for the folks that were in the room today that you are changing the narrative. You had people that were listening intently, but also figuring out ways that they could take that message back to their office, mm-hmm. back to their community. And I know that you even heard from some of the people that they said, well, I'm driving back home today. I'm a passenger in a car, but I'll be texting three, four, five people letting them know that I'm thinking about them and I care about them. So we greatly appreciate all the work you're doing with I'm Changing the Narrative and for taking the time to be with us at our executive leadership conference to share your message of joy.
Yeah. And thank you for what you're doing. You know, you are giving people a platform to be able to share their lives and share their stories. And so for people that maybe weren't here or however they're going to consume this podcast, you know, they've gotten to hear stories of people that are way cooler than me, but also I get to share my story and then maybe something that I said, then they go dig or they go to the website or then they take it home to their families. There was a family quickly that walked in at the end, and it was just about the time where I was talking about dreaming with your family and that your kids need to see you dream and sometimes fail and succeed and laugh and say, I'm sorry and set goals. And it was so awesome because there were kids in the room. And when I started to talk about that, there were so many nods in the room, parents that knew what they needed to go home and talk about and do and show in front of their kids, or that their kids need to see them not burn out. Kids need to see them performing soul care and taking care of their own souls. And so I would just say thank you for providing a platform that people are definitely going to consume this and have in the past and hear really neat stories, and hopefully it changes their life.